Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Welcome to the Games Gone podcast with me, Tom Ross, and thrilled this week my guest is former Walsall, Birmingham City, Peterborough, all points east and west, midfielder Martin O'Connor. Skip, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, Tom. Well,
Skip, one of the things I've always wanted to ask you, why so late into the game?
I wasn't good enough. No. I think it's one of those times, isn't it, when you're at school and you start playing for teams and you get recognised and picked up by various clubs, your mates do it. And I just probably wasn't good enough at the time. A good friend of mine, Paul Granger, got picked up at Villa. Was there for a while. I think he made pro. Myself, playing for the local teams and the town teams, was invited to go to Aston Villa. I went there for a season training, just Tuesdays and Thursdays. And at the end of the season, just wasn't good enough. And that was it.
Could you have gone to Villa? Did I read somewhere you could have gone to Villa at one time?
I just trained with them, Tom. Trained with my mate, Paul Granger, as I mentioned. But I just, I wasn't picked. I wasn't invited to go for the second season. So, I just sort of drifted out of the game.
So you ended up at Bromsgrove. Bobby Hope would have taken you to Bromsgrove, would he?
Bobby Hope made my career, Tom. When you talk about influences in your career, Bobby Hope was the main instigator for me. An ex-player in Scottish international.
Midfielder,
Blues, Albion, and he just...
And a top bloke.
Oh, great, great, great manager. And for me at the time, 18, a bit cocky, chip on my shoulder.
No.
yeah, chip on my shoulder. And he brought me down to earth. Yeah. And I've got to be honest, if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have made pro at all anyway.
Really?
Honestly.
Wow.
He was fantastic.
So... I suppose there, you're at Bromsgrove and you're catching the attention of the scouts and all of a sudden there comes an opportunity to move to Palace. I mean, how did that come about?
Again, I'll be honest with you, going from the lower leagues and pub teams that I used to play for, going into Bromsgrove, training Tuesdays and Thursdays, playing on a Saturday, can't go out Fridays. And as I said, I was cocky at that age. It was a bit of a... I didn't really want to sacrifice my Friday nights out with the boys, and so there was some Fridays I'd go out, and come Saturday I'm not saying fit to play, but I didn't give them up my best. And me and Bob had a big argument, shall we say, one Thursday. He had me around the neck and in the bar at Bromsgrove. I come from my wages, and he said, look, the way you're going, you've got to either sacrifice your Friday nights and stuff like that, or carry on and you won't fulfill your potential that I think you've got.
You'll drift, basically.
Exactly. And him and Dougie Griffiths was his assistant. Yeah. Both pulled me and said, look.
Great lad, Dougie, as well,
great,
by the way.
But good non-league people, good people. And I remember, driving home thinking, right, okay, well, if they've got faith in me, I'll give it a go. And a good friend of mine, his dad, Grenville Palin, who played the game, he pulled me as well and said, look, Bobby's found me and said, look, he fancies, he thinks he can go all the way to be a pro. Get your head down. As I say to him, I found women and smoking and drinks and stuff like that at 18, as 18-year-olds do, and it was tough. But when I got my head down, to be fair, Bobby was brilliant, played me in games. And then he pulled me one day and said, look, go and see Harry Redknapp at Bournemouth. I went down to Bournemouth, had a trial, played in a game against Crystal Palace. Steve Copeland and Alan Smith at the time of coaching staff at Palace, they... knew I was a trialist, blah, blah, blah. Went for a week at Cambridge. Cambridge was interested, John Beck. Went to Derby for a trial game. So all these clubs were interested. Yeah. And to be fair to Bobby, he said, look, just go for the best one that suits you. And I knew Stan Connolly at the time had moved to Palace and spoke to Brendan Batson. And I think, to be fair, Crystal Palace offered the most money and I moved to Palace.
With respect, you only played a couple of games for them in two seasons. Was there a problem adapting?
Well, from a guy from Walsall, Tom, sort of the bright lights of of Croydon, if you like. It was a strange thing for me, you know.
You were a full-time pro all of a sudden.
I was from you know, driving trains at Bescot, yeah. For the railway. I just bought a house in Walsall to moving down to Thorntonneath, Croydon. Mm. You know, it was strange. And, my time at Palace taught me how to be a pro, but not how to be a footballer, if that makes sense. Mm. So with all the players and the big egos and the characters at Crystal Palace at the time, you know, Andy Thorne, Eric Young, Chris Coleman, Richard Shaw, and Gareth Southgate.
Yeah. There was Southgate there.
Yeah, there was some big yeah. Jeff Thomas. Wow. You know, it was tough to get in. So it was just learning the game, and I had a good coach down there, Steve Harrison, who taught me well. And to be fair, I got fit. I got a sort of a knowledge of my position and what's required. And luckily for me, Kenny Ibbett and Paul Taylor at Walsall watched me in a game at Southampton and took me on loan.
I suppose really, you made your pro debut at like 25 or something, which is very late,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah, but I think that's probably why when you look at my career, I've tried to...
Did that help you?
I was more mature, Tom, obviously. I knew the world and I was more streetwise. I knew what it was about, you know, getting up at 3 or 4 o'clock to doing shifts. So it was an easier life being a pro footballer. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think, as I said previously, I don't think if I'd had gone through the system as an apprentice, a scholar, I would have made it.
Mm. I suppose also you went into a team. It was a really good team, wasn't it? I mean, it's a cracking team Walsall had at that time.
Yeah, Kevin McDonald was there and there was some... Dean Smith was there. So to go from, you know, from playing for Bromsgrove and playing in the reserves at Palace to first team at Walsall, my hometown club, I suppose it was a bit of pressure because, you know, every home game I need about 50 tickets because all my mates too tight to pay. So, but, you know, my mum and my dad come and my family, so it was great for me. And it sort of opened my eyes to what you can achieve and what life is like as a professional footballer, playing in the first team.
At Walsall, you won promotion, didn't you?
Yeah. Walsall, obviously, was a great time for me. The first year we got in the playoffs, I went back to Palace. I thought then I was confident enough to try making the first team squad, and I did start in the first team squad. Never really played games, as you've mentioned. And I just felt then, at my age, 25, it's time to move on and play regularly, consistently. And again, Walsall came in for me the second time on loan, with a view to a move, and I moved on to Walsall, and we got promotion in our first year with Chris Nicol.
Chris Nicol again, top man. But who was your team then? Who was in your team then?
We had a guy, Scotty Outham, who signed from Luton, been at Tottenham, England, fantastic player. Chrissy Marsh, Darren Bradley, Adrian Vivash. Mm. We had some really good players. Charlie Natamar, Carl Ipen, Kevin Wilson, Charlie Palmer. Yeah. So the team, we had characters, we had experience, we had good players. And, I mean, I know it's like Walsall people to tell you, every home game we'd go out as a squad. So, you know, that kind of thing when you're on a Tuesday night at Rochdale and it's pissing down the rain, that kind of camaraderie gets you through and gets you the 3 points, and that's what we had.
I covered that and I did the commentary at that final. Was that the Millennium, I think it was, wasn't it, Millennium?
No, that was when they got promoted. I'd moved on then. I'd already gone.
What was the final then, for your promotion then?
No, we straight through.
Straight through?
Yeah, we went to
automatic?
Bury. Yeah, automatic. We went to Bury.
No messing with you, was it?
No, I don't do that. No, but we went to Bury and, we got a draw. We played Scarborough and I think we needed to win and we beat them and then we moved on. I mean, this is Walsall. We was away from home for 3 days. Walsall put us in the hotel for 3 days. I mean, Walsall never do that. They don't even do it now. So we was like, what's going on? But yeah, I remember that I'd come off the last 2 minutes, I'd get a big gash in my shin, but we got promotion. I remember the doctor was giving me stitches in my shin wound and Chris Nicol come in and started shaking me like, do you know what I mean? I'm having stitches in my shin, but yeah, great. And then they took us away. For Walsall to get promotion in the way they did, automatic, was fantastic.
It is one of them clubs where a lot of people, whoever they support in the Midlands, would say Walsall will be second club.
Yeah. I mean, it's my hometown club, Tom, so to play for them, to coach them, to manage them, to captain them. You know, I've done it all.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic privilege to me. Fantastic.
Yeah. I was going to ask you why you're not back there, because they've been looking for managers, but we'll come to that in a bit. But then off to Posh, to Peterborough. Did Walsall need the money?
Tom, it's... as people know about Walsall, you know, that they don't offer big contracts, and my contract was coming to an end, and I'd spoke to Chris. There's a bid coming for half a million from Derby at the time. They wouldn't let me go. So I just said, right, if you're not going to let me go, give me a better contract. Because at the time, I'm not being confident, cocky. I was the best player. Yeah. I was an asset. and they wouldn't give me the contract that I wanted. So I spoke to Baz, who was at Blues at the time.
Because you could have gone to Blues then, couldn't you?
Yeah, and a deal, I think it was 750 grand, was sorted. Went to see Baz. Baz offered me a contract, good contract. I went to see Karen. Karen says, no, you can't have that contract. Went to Baz and said, look, Baz, Karen says you can't. Baz says, oh, right, okay, you can't have it then. And that was it. And then in the summer, he left.
It beggars belief, the manager says.
But Baz was, again, you know, the short time I had with Baz, he was brilliant. He was brilliant. He brought Peterborough, signed me through Tribunal. He said he got me to steal, I think, I can't remember the figure it was, me and Scotty Houghton.
Yeah.
And I remember on the day we signed at Peterborough, the press conference, he said, you're going to sell me. And that's Baz. You know, I've just signed, I'm the record signing, 3 years, but I'm going to sell you. And to be fair, he was fair to his word. He sold me after about 4 months because the financial problems Peterborough found themselves in. But even then, I remember driving to St Andrews to meet, to see Trevor Francis. And there was, I think it was half a million and about 10 players going the other way because he'd built up this squad at Blues that Trevor wanted out. So there was about four players or five players going the other way plus half a million.
Trevor Francis, though, I've known Trevor since he was 14, and you were a player. Did you feel it? Because I always felt that you were a player that was special to him.
I don't think he made me feel special, Tom, if I'm being honest. But like I've said this previously, when a manager buys you, you've got a lot of trust in him, and you know you like him because he's bought you. And it depends how it finishes. But with Trevor, for me, I think he knew what I was about. If that makes sense, he brought me into a team at the time,
and you delivered. Let's be fair.
Well, Steve Bruce, Gary Ablett, Mike Newell, Barry Horn, Paul Furlong. You know, we had some, Paul Devlin. We had some good players. Michael John,
Ian Bennett,
Benno, the GK. Yeah, so, you know, we had a great team, and to being involved in that kind of team. And then you look at the coaching staff, Trevor Francis, Blues legend, Ian Bowyer, European
Mick
champion,
Mills.
Mick Mills, capped for 70 times for his country. It's unbelievable.
And there's the kid from Bromsgrove.
And there's the kid from Walsall, Goscott. Yeah,
playing at Bromsgrove
exactly.
From Walsall. Now you're playing with Steve Bruce.
Field of dreams. It's a field of dreams. And
Did you feel that, though?
Yeah, honestly.
Can I ask you, is that... Because you, the one thing that stands out with you, I mean, you're a good player, but I think people forgot how good you were and always talked about what you put into a game. Did you put in a lot because of where you'd come from?
Probably, but I think that was me. I think when you play for Blues, Tommy, as you well know, as soon as you give that impression to the fans, if the fans like you, they like you. And all you got to give to Blues fans is 100%.
Yeah.
That's all you got to give. And I remember talking to a particular fan after one game, and he says, look, you know, all you got to do for the Blues badge, you've got to do this fight and blah, blah, blah. And then we'll love you.
Yeah.
And that's all I tried to do. And then, you know, again, the privilege to be made captain, skipper. It's like captain of Birmingham City. Now, I know a lot of people think, well, that ain't a lot. But to me and to... There's 30,000...
Big deal.
Blues fans would love to be captain of Birmingham City. And I was that person for 2 years, so fantastic.
Do you think that they related to you? Because... With all due respect, you're a working class lad. You've come from, you played at Bromsgrove, you came to the game late, you'd been a train driver, you'd done all the jobs.
Yeah.
Do you think that was why they took to you? Because they almost felt you were one of them.
I'd love to say yes, Tom, but I don't know. It's just the way I played at Birmingham, like I played at Walsall, like I played at Peterborough, like I played at Shrewsbury. I hate losing. I want my teammates to do their best. I'll do my best. I'll lead by example, whether I've got the armband or not.
It's war for 90 minutes.
It is. I mean, you know, I've got a lot of friends in the game, and I've played against a lot of friends, and I never spoke to them before the game, never spoke to them in the tunnel, never spoke to them during the game. After the game, I'll buy them a beer, no problem. But at that time, 3 points is up for grabs, and I want the 3 points.
So, the team that Trevor put together as well, Worthington Cup final, I mean, what a team that was.
When you talk about that, Tom, and again, I've done it a lot of times, but if you look at the rounds we got through, you know, we played Tottenham and beat Tottenham at White Hart Lane. Yeah. Dealing about Alibaba scoring a screamer. But that performance was probably, arguably, one of the best performances of the run.
Yeah.
And then we Sheffield Wednesday, we beat them at home. Newcastle we beat at home. And I think this is why sometimes people don't understand when you play for Birmingham City, and I'm going to say that, it's a privilege. Mm. And you have to give the fans what they want. They want you to see you run about and be competitive and aggressive and want to win. And that cup run was unbelievable. The Ipswich home game, I've said it. It was
the atmosphere.
Oh, Tom, I never ever got emotional, stressed, pressured, nerves before games. I was shitting myself in the tunnel because I could hear, I was the first one out, and I could hear and see what everyone else heard. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Martin Granger, head of far post.
Yeah, I mean, even that, you know, we lost away at Ipswich, yeah, but it was a close game, and we knew coming back that we had a chance. And, you know, you look at the Ipswich game, the pitch was awful, yeah. But there's no... If we'd have played Real Madrid that day, Tom, we would have beat them. I'm telling you, because the fans just dragged us out of the
line. Sucked it in.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I mean, you mentioned a lot of names there. One you didn't mention, who was a big influence for Blues at the time, was Stan Lazzarini.
Stan, I mean, he's the funniest, quietest guy you've ever met.
Unbelievable.
You know, he's a brilliant character, great player. Great player. Again, he's one of those who, when he's not playing, you miss him. Yeah. You know, when he's playing, you don't appreciate what he does. But for me, you know, that group of players we had, Stan was a standout character, standout player for us, created, assisted so many goals, but had a goal in him himself. But the quietest lad off the pitch, he'd always come out on a night out with you, always have a good time, surprise you a few times with thing antics you got up to, but a great character.
I saw that. I mean, I saw that togetherness, if you like, twice. I saw it when I was with the team when we at the hotel before the final.
I saw
that togetherness. And,
yeah.
I mean, I thought you were a bunch of Looney Tunes, if I'm honest.
It's true.
But I saw it more years and years and years later when we had a testimonial game for Joey Hutchinson.
Yeah.
And I saw... Because I often thought... I mean, not being rude to you, how did this team take Liverpool to extra time and be the better team and should have won? Mm. How did that happen? Liverpool with Fowler and all them sort of players. I saw the dressing room that day for the Joey Hutchinson testimonial. I knew that togetherness. Mm.
Tom, we wasn't brilliant ability-wise. The team we had, and you know, I'll sit here and tell you that, but we feared nobody.
Yeah.
We feared nobody. And even, you know, again, you look at the Worthington Cup final, for the first half, we never got a kick. Honestly, if you watch the game, we never got a kick. But that belief, that camaraderie, that togetherness, and if I'm being honest, that cockiness to say, you know what, you ain't going to beat us.
Yeah. Our dead body.
Was there, and you know, to go through and to take them to extra time was something that, when you look back, obviously you've got memories, but you think, you know what, we were so close to taking a cup home for Birmingham City.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm going to say on tape, David Ellery killed us that day.
I know.
Killed us.
I mean, there isn't anybody. Whether you're Liverpool or Birmingham, whether you played for Liverpool or not, you know that was a mistake by him.
Well, all my family were there, Tom, and I'll be honest with you. Me and my family went shopping into Birmingham. This was like a week after, and people were coming up to me celebrating the day,
yeah,
but crying because they were so close to seeing. I mean,
getting beat's one thing. You've been beat. You know
course,
what it's about.
Of course, yeah.
But to be robbed.
Exactly. But then there's fans crying, you know, with pride maybe, and that we were so close. And you're thinking, that's what it means to them. So it's got to be mean. It's got to mean the same to me.
Yeah.
And from that, you know, you go back. And I remember I was injured, obviously, and I was fighting to get fit for the next game. And I remember Trevor coming to the physio room saying, look, leave it. But you want to play because it's the next game for Birmingham City and show the fans that you appreciated their support on the day.
Yeah. We mentioned Stan Lazaridis. You had John McCarthy, who came back from broken legs.
Yeah, I mean, as much as people might go on about TF, the gaffer, he assembled, for me, a squad that was there or thereabouts every season. And we were there or thereabouts every season. We just couldn't get out of the line. And maybe it needed someone, with respect, like Steve Bruce, a bit more horrible to get us out of the line. But the squad we had... on and off the pitch, Tom, were top, top class.
Was Trevor still the best player at training?
Oh, it was infuriating, so frustrating. He'd be on the wing and cutting and ping one top corner. And then he'd allow fans to come in and watch a couple of times just so they can watch him ping him in top corner. And we couldn't get near him, Tom. And imagine him in his prime. He must have been some player.
I watched him.
Some player, yeah, Tom.
For sure. Did... I can't remember. Were you were in the team that played at Preston, were you?
Yeah, I was captain, Tom. Captain.
Yeah, of course. I've wiped it from my memory, mate. I mean, was that the most bizarre moment in football for you?
Yes and no. I mean, the bizarre moments in football for me have been around the playoffs. You know, we played Barnsley and we got stuffed at home.
Four.
And to be fair, we never done a lot between the two games against Barnsley because everybody's just in shock. The Preston, I know people go on about
the You won chains. Away at Barnsley, by the way.
Yeah, well, I think that was, again, pride more than anything. But the Preston debacle, which end the penalties are going to be taken and blah, blah, blah. But the only thing I've regrets, and I've not got a few to, not got a lot to, but, you know, every time Blues have been in a penalty shootout, the gaffers took me off before. And I used to take penalties for Blues, so what does that tell you?
Good point, well made. Yeah. To be fair, it was the same manager that let a goalkeeper take it before a midfielder, Holland,
Chris Holland at Watford, yeah. So, you know, you've got to ask Trevor that, you've got to ask TF that.
But another thing, lots of fans say, talk us through the where you punched Musket.
Yeah, my right hook. So, right, okay, I'm going to say it. So, me and Martin Granger had a bet. Because all leading up to that game, obviously Blues-Wolves is a bit of a Midland derby, blah, blah, blah. And Kevin Muscat, great guy, best mate in football.
Off the pitch.
Yeah, no. he'd been slating us in the press, saying we're rubbish and we've got no good players and blah, blah, blah. And it just infuriated me. You know what I'm like, I'm a bit aggressive at times. And Granger's more aggressive than me at times. So we had a bet. So obviously him being right back for Wolves, Granger being left back for Blues, me being in midfield, Granger's got more chance probably of nailing him than me, but we had a bet. We're going to, you know, a little wager. Who nails him first? So during the game, in the tunnel, I remember looking at him, giving him daggers. He's shitting himself, Tom. I'm telling you, he's shitting himself. Plays the game. Nobody's near him for 85 minutes. Grange ain't got near him. So of course, half time, me and Grange saying, you're going to get him, like, what? Who's going to have him? Anyway, the ball goes in the corner. I've made a run, got on the end of the ball, and he's there, and I know it's him. And it's thought, pulling at my jersey. Now, obviously, during the game, people pull at your jersey and you ain't bothered. But it's this guy who I've got a bet with who I can earn some money from. So I've just swung round and given him a right hook. He's gone down. I'm started walking. So now it's off in front of the tilt and it is. So I know I'm red card, but I'm thinking, 200 quid. Granny's going to give me 200 quid because of the bet. I get to red card, walks down the tunnel. I think we won the game. Brian Hughes got sent off as well, yeah, the same game. Girls in the dressing room. I'm saying to Grange, we won, yeah, great, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Where's my money? Yeah, I'll give you your money, blah, blah, blah. Trevor comes over, like, going to do me 2 weeks' wages. This is on a Saturday. So I'm down to, I've got the bet off Grange, I've won the bet. The gaffer's going to do it to me 2 weeks' wages. I've got a 3-match ban. Grange still never paid me to this day.
Has not paid you?
No. Martin Grange still owes me money.
And in the camaraderie of footballers and train drivers,
and Martin Grange's a train driver now, so I want to get on a train that he's driving. I want to pull the cord just because he still owes me money.
So was it under Trevor you became an international?
Tom, yes it was Trevor, yeah.
To be fair, what a place to go to be an international.
It's unbelievable.
Home games.
Oh, it's
Cayman
Seven
Islands.
Mile Beach, rum punch, white sand, blue sea. Yeah, great. Yeah, an agent phoned up and said, look, do you want to play for Cayman Islands? You can apply, you're eligible. Yeah, I'll go and play. Unfortunately, it was during the season. I think we had crew away and another game away. And to be fair to Trevor, he let me go. He didn't want to let me go. And I went, come back tanned and, you know what I mean, all that. I'd had rum punch. I've been eating rice and fish and overweight probably. We didn't do a lot of training. But yeah, I went and then, I mean, to be fair to Cayman Islands, they were fantastic, brilliant. We played Jamaica in a friendly. Michael Johnson played against me. And I mean, normally there's like a couple of 20, 30 people. There were 6,000 come to the game.
Wow.
6,000. So for Cayman Islands, fantastic. We lost 1-0. Invited Alva again to play in a World Cup qualifier, but FIFA put the block on it. So we went over there, couldn't play. We stayed out there for 3 days on a jolly, basically.
To be fair,
it was horrible, Tommy. It was horrible.
It's hell of a place to have it.
It was horrible. As I say, blue sky, blue sea, white beach, rum punch. It was a horrible place to be.
Then, of course, Trevor left.
Yeah.
And I know on the day, and I remember that you got a bit upset at the way it happened with messages coming out on the website and stuff.
I think sometimes there's ways of doing things, Tom.
Proper way.
You've got to do it proper way. And he wasn't just a manager of a football club. He was Trevor Francis at Birmingham City. And I think he put a lot into the club as a player and as a manager. And I think, obviously, he brought me. And I think it didn't go down well. So I think that was in the back of my mind when obviously the new manager came in, Steve Bruce, who I'd played with. And, you know, from the outset, if I'm being honest, me and Steve, as a manager and a player relationship, didn't really get on.
How was that? Because you played alongside him.
Yeah, I think personalities. I needed more respect off a manager. I'd been captain, I'd played for the club, and yes, you know, he's a manager, but I felt like he didn't respect me enough, what I'd earned playing for Birmingham City. And, you know, we come to...
Not demanded, but you thought you'd earned it.
Yeah, of course. And he probably was the same when he was at Man United or wherever he's been. So it was a relationship that was not the best. And I knew from the outset that he probably, you know, it was time to move on.
You played a lot of games in the promotion season. I think you left then, but you played a lot of games and weren't there to play in the promotion. How did that get to you as a Birmingham City man, but as a man?
Well, I think if you look at the story, the backstory behind it, Tom, you know, we had a chat and he says, look, best to move on. And there was a few clubs who expressed an interest for me to go and play, but they were in the playoff position, so he didn't want me to be sold to them or moved to them, which I get, I understood. But Walsall Football Club, who was at the bottom of the Championship, they come in for me, and he let me go to Walsall. Now, me personally, from a career point of view, I'm coming, you know, I'm getting older, and it was just another challenge to go and help my hometown club stay in the Championship, but I felt Steve could have handled it better with a pro, and a respected pro, as I thought I was. But you look at Blues, and luckily they got to the Millennium, beat Norwich. And I remember being in a bar in Ayanapa, because Walsall stayed up, and I was in a bar absolutely pissed, but so happy that, you know, Walsall stayed up in the Championship, I'd helped them, and Blues had got promotion.
All your mates were up.
Exactly. And I remember texting everybody saying, well done, guys, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I mean, happy, but sad with a little, you know, that I wasn't part of it.
Walsall for a while, I think then Shrewsbury for a while, and then Kidderminster. I mean, was it, you kept going because you just love playing?
I think when you get to a certain age, Tom, people tell you, you know, play till as long as you can.
Yes.
And that's what I did. Shrewsbury, they just got relegated into the conference with Nationwide now. And again, challenge. Can I help them get up back into the league? Which I did, thankfully. Did a bit of coaching there. Then a friend of mine, Stuart Watkins, got the job at Kidderminster. I went to help him out, player coach. He got the bullet and had a...
Was it Mark Yates who came in then?
Mark Yates come in, yeah.
Ex-Blues as well.
Ex-Blues again.
Ex-midfielder.
Yeah, but again, it's probably me, but, you know, my mate just got the sack. We got a couple of decent results. Not that I wanted the job, but it might have been nice to be offered it. Mark Yates come in, and he had a different philosophy, he had a different way of doing things, and it didn't suit me, so I just moved on.
Yes, I find that a little bit difficult, if I'm honest, you know, just... moved on, because you could just stick it out, couldn't you?
Yeah, but why stick it out and earn money that I'm not earning? You know, I'm not working full time, sitting on the bench and being in the stands. That's not me. As you know, Tom, I've never been somebody to be on the bench and in the stands. No. I'm always first choice on the team sheet. But it's something that I don't like. I'm not confident in. I want to be playing. If I'm not playing, then I'm not happy.
I only see a side of it with the Blues All Star charity team, but. There's still that competitiveness about you.
That's in life, though, Tom, I think.
Is that just natural? Is that part of your makeup?
Yeah. I mean, I need a lot of makeup, Tom, don't I? But
to be fair, don't you?
No, I just think, I think, you know, it's some people are quite easy and quite openly say that they don't mind losing. I don't like losing. I'm competitive, as you well know. And people who've played with me and played against me know I'm competitive. And I think that's the only way I am, because that's the only way I can be.
So... from Kidderminster, I mean, was the turmoil then? Do you think, what do I do next? What happens?
Well, I think with injuries and stuff, Tom, you take its toll and you think, right, I'll have a break. And I did. I had 18 months off, not doing a lot because I needed that break, spend time with my family, the growing up. But I think if it's in your blood, it's in your nature, you want to be in and around football. And I did some of my badges and thought, right, okay, maybe use my name to try and get in somewhere and do a bit of coaching, which obviously I do and I've enjoyed ever since.
You, before we get on to that, the career after football, what managers, apart from Steve Bruce, did you not get on with, or did you get on with them all, or did you not? What? Because I would imagine you've got to be looked after in a particular way, I would think.
I'm not precious, Tom.
No, I don't mean precious, but I mean you've got to treat you, I think, with respect.
I think managers have to treat every player with respect. But for me, if a manager buys you, Tom, you've got probably a bit more respect for him because they've brought you, they trust you, you know, and all things like that. They've invested in you. If you're at a club and a manager goes and a new manager comes in, that you've got to build that relationship. And I think with Steve, you know, as a player, it's a different relationship than when he comes in as a manager. And he has his philosophy, he has his ways, and he's done unbelievably well as a manager in his career. And I still, you know, when I see him, I say hello, and, you know, there's no animosity.
No, right.
No, it's just the fact that we just didn't get on, me as a player and him as a manager.
So, who was your favourite manager to play for?
As I've said, you know, I think Bobby Hope made me the person I was as a footballer. I think Trevor put a lot of faith in me, buying me, spending a lot of money and blah, blah, blah on me, and then making me captain. I think, you know, you look at Chris Nicol gaining promotion, again, made me captain. Jimmy Quinn at Shrewsbury made me captain. So, luckily, I've been made captain, probably because I've got a big mouth, at every club. And so
that's a big part of your makeup. You're a leader.
You know what, Tom? I say this to my caddy boys here. Whoever's captain, all they've got different is an armband. That's all they've got. So, you know, I could not have an armband and play in a team and still be exactly the same person I am.
So without the armband, you wouldn't have been any different?
Of course. You know, there was a lot of big characters in the teams I've played in, especially the Blues, as you know, Tom. And I'm not saying I was the head of those characters, but we was all in together, and the only difference is I had the armband.
But how difficult was that? Difficult when you'd got Gary Ablett, won everything with Everton and Liverpool, Steve Bruce, Man United, won everything.
Yeah.
Was that difficult?
I think those have been at big clubs, Steve Bruce, Gary Ablett. I think they know how to, not to lead, but they know how to be captain of a club. And when you're captain of Birmingham City, as I found out, yes, you lead by example, but I would have done that anyway. But there's another string to your bow. You have to get about the players, you have to go about the team, you have to not look after everybody, but try and look after everybody, whether it be on the pitch or off the pitch. And, you know, you have to organise nights out and things like Christmas do's. Oh, big responsibility.
Came into your own then.
Big responsibility, Tom. So you learn, and I think that helped me for the rest of my career to not to be a leader, but to be a captain rather than, a skipper.
Mm. We've talked about him before, but I was going to ask you, the craziest player you've ever played with?
There's been a few of those, Tom.
Well, Birmingham had a few.
Oh, Ian Bennett. He was crazy. But not crazy mad, just weird. Well,
I've mentioned it before, but in the hotel,
when
I was doing the phone-in, and I was, funny enough, Stan Nazaridis was on, and he walked in stark naked.
Yeah. I mean, we had that about us, Tom. You know,
by the way, it must have been a cold day.
And yes, it was, yeah. He's not a big lad, Ian Bennett. But he ain't bothered. But yeah, I mean, characters.
This Danny Sonner.
Fantastic. I mean, you know all of it. I mean, but you know what, Tom? I think you need... If I was manager now, I wouldn't like a dressing room that's quiet and can be intimidated. I'd like a full of characters and, you know, men and things like that. So I think Martin Granger, in their own ways, I could name reel off players who, in their own way,
Mickey were Eden.
Oh, great lad. What a player, by the way.
Funny, by the way, Eden.
But you know all the characters I'm going to mention, but I can go to Walsall, Chris Marsh.
Yeah, what a lovely man as well.
Fantastic, great guys. Dean Keats, Darren Rack, there's all...
Dean Keats,
in their own
Rack.
Way.
Yeah,
in their own way,
people.
Tom. The characters, and they add to wherever they were at the time.
Yeah. So, you know, what's the craziest thing you could... What's the story that sticks out in your mind?
How long you got? We've done a few, you know, Christmas do, Chris Yolland running down the tunnel in Birmingham dressed as a chicken or something on Christmas do. Ian Bennett leaving a turd in Trevor Francis's toilet. Filling Danny Sonner's car with leaves. He had a soft top, filling it with leaves. So, you know, I could go on, Tom, but these all... Obviously, it's all old school now, but it's things that helped us at the time and add to the memories you've got.
The bonding as well.
I think so. Yeah. You know, we had a lot of bonding at Blues. A lot of bonding.
I remember
sessions.
West Brom. You know, a player turned up and he was a bit of a big time, and they filled his car with snow.
Yeah. Well, we took Alan Johnson in on loan. I think he was, I forget who he was playing for now, and Scottish great winger. We took him to Dave and Buster's, I think, in Solihull. Got him absolutely wrecked. And we didn't know till he was absolutely pissed that his missus was expecting a baby any time soon. So things like that, you know, you're thinking, wow, okay. Right, get him a cab now. But, you know, it's at the time, I think football needs coaches in the game, especially now, Tom.
Was there a player, I mean, firstly, who's the toughest you came across in midfield? Who was the toughest opponent? And probably the one that you enjoyed the battle with.
Oh, there's been a few. I think off the top of my head, I remember playing against Curtis Woodhouse when he was at Sheffield United. Tough. Yeah. Come to Blues, he was brilliant. Yeah. Michael Brown again at Sheffield United, sorry.
He went to Spurs as well.
Yeah, yeah. Sean Gregan.
At West Brom.
At West Brom. Big, hard player. So, you know, I think you give them respect because you're playing against them, but afterwards, I'd like to think that they look at me and think, that was an hard game. That was a tough game.
And the best you've played with, you think?
There's been a few, Tom. Yeah. In their own ways, you know, I look and I've got a lot of admiration for players, in my opinion, who just, you look at them and think, yeah, you'd like to play with them. Yeah. And I've played, you know, Paul Devlin, fantastic. Yeah. Peter Endler was unbelievable. I've seen him twist people up and untwist them with his skills. You know, Martin Granger, great left back, and what a wand!
What a wand! Do you remember his goal when he kicked Man United, the free kick?
But you know, these players probably don't get a mention in the bigger picture. No. But Blues fans and Walsall fans, Chris Marsh was fantastic. Scotty Edwards, unbelievable. Carl Lightburn, the clubs that I've mentioned and the fans that I've mentioned will know these players and think, yeah, good player.
That's why they become legends at clubs.
Well, I think the name legend, the word legend, is bandied about too
often.
But I think
yeah.
just good players for the club. Yeah. Good players for the club.
So then you tried your hand at management, didn't you, in non-league, Hales Owen. Mm. Graham Hyde was with you, I think. Yeah, Hyde. I came to watch you a couple of times. I'm surprised you didn't get the sack of them yet.
But you know what, Tom? It's
Was it tough, though, non-league?
It was because the guys are digging holes all week and you want them to train and give them the best on a Tuesday because that's what you was like. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're digging holes all Thursday and you ask them to come in training and do a little bit and then travelling. And so it was like a sort of a precursor to what football is like. And it was tough, but it was enjoyable. I mean, I had Heidi with me. We brought Paul Devlin in.
Yeah. You know, Dwayne Darby.
But, you know, I remember getting Troy Deeney in. Troy Deeney come and played for us. He played 8 games, scored 10 goals, something like that. And to be fair, that sort of got him back into the Walsall setup, and you know the rest is history. But that, I think it was about 18 months we was there. It was fantastic. I mean, I think unbeaten in 14 games, I think something like that. So if it wasn't for the new ownership, we'd probably still have been there now. I don't know, but yeah, it was a happy time for us. Good time.
So, are you a better coach than you are a manager?
I think, if I'm being honest, I think I'm a better manager than a coach. Only because I think knowing what players need at the time,
and getting the best out of them.
Yes, exactly. Is a big thing. Is a big thing for us, for me. And also, when you look at the way managers and coaches are now, I think to be a manager, you're sort of the head of the pyramid. And I think to do that, you know, you know how to manage, you know what teams to pick, you know, squad selections, you know what's needed day to day. And I think for me, I'm a better person at doing that than, you know, just a coach, like a second in command, if you like.
I remember the manager got sacked at Walsall, you took over and tried to save them, and you had a good run, I think, towards the end of the season, and they didn't give you the job. I couldn't understand it.
Well, I mean, first of all, my mate got the sack. He brought me in and he got the sack. Yes, results wasn't great, but I think from the inside looking out, you could tell that he knew what he was on about, and we just unlucky at times. And then, to be fair to the chairman, Jeff, he gave me the option, and I said, right, okay, 5 games, me be me, like a challenge, I'll do it. I'd spoke to Dean, I said, look, do you mind if I take? Yeah, no problem. And the first game in charge, we lost Accrington Stanley 2-1, never forget it, we were awful. But the next 4 games, I thought we'd give a good account of ourselves, and I'm the only head coach, manager at Walsall not to be beaten at the new stadium, so that's something. But you know, we played Peterborough, and I was only reminded of this a while ago from a fan. We beat Peterborough, we were going for promotion, 3-0 at home, Barry Fry being the director of football at Peterborough, so that sort of kept us going until the last game of the season. And you know, we played Shrewsbury and we needed to win, and all the results go for us, we got a draw. And you look back and you think, 5 games, maybe if you'd had longer, because I did enjoy it, Tom, the 5 games, but if you'd had longer, then maybe you could turn him around and you might not get relegated, and I believe that. But it just wasn't for me. The chairman went in a different direction, and that's fine. That's what happens in football.
But you'd had five games. From outside, it looked like you'd earned the opportunity.
Yeah, but you don't get opportunities sometimes in football, Tom. And, you know, it wasn't offered to me. I didn't ask for it. And as I say, I think the ownership changed, the direction changed, the philosophy changed. And when that happens, Tom, you've got no, you know, you can't control it. So you have to deal with it and get on with it.
So tell me, why are you not in the game now?
I think probably because I think I'm successful as a businessman with the academy that I run now, Tom. I think that's going well. We've been running for 8 years, education and football. And I think, you know, the opportunity and sometimes the desire for me to apply for jobs and be interviewed and things like that, which is a process and you have to go through. You have to get fully qualified. I think I've sort of took my foot off the pedal in that respect. And, you know, from the outside looking in, yes, I still feel like I've got something to give football. But, you know, in my capacity as a senior scout at Bristol City, I still go and scout for Bristol players, opposition analysis. So
you have a look. You're still watching games.
I'm still watching live games. So I'm still in the game a little bit in some respect.
So developing players, is that a buzz for you? Because I would have thought that would have been natural for you to develop a player because you've been there, seen it, done it and got all the T-shirts. I mean, is that a loss to the game? It looks like it.
Tom, I think me and 1,000 other ex-players could develop players because, we've been there, done it. But I think it takes special people to develop players, special coaches to develop players, not just ex-pros. And when you are a coach and you see the developments in players, it does give you a buzz. It's like going out on a Saturday and playing yourself, because that buzz, you never get it back, Tom. And, you know, a lot of players who are ex-players who I know, they probably don't miss football, but they miss the banter, the changing room, that everyday football mentality. But yeah, I get that when I go away, when I work for an American company coaching American players abroad. So all in all, you know, it is what it is, and you just get on with what you're doing.
You've been in Spain, haven't you? Has that been coaching?
Yeah, I've been coaching a squad from America, playing against Spanish teams in Bilbao and Madrid. Luckily, it's gone really well. We've had a lot of interest in the players that have been on show and through live stream and coaching Scandinavia, Malta, Turkey. So hopefully some of them will get fixed up. So, yeah, from that respect, it's been fantastic.
How important is having played? I know that because you've played doesn't make you a good coach, doesn't make you a good manager, because George Best couldn't manage, Bobby Moore couldn't manage.
He managed himself, George Best, but great players.
But my point is, surely there's a knowledge of walking out at Villa Park, St Andrews, West Brom, wherever, there's a knowledge about this is what to expect. That knowledge.
Yeah, I think sometimes, Tom, when you're speaking to young pros, it's hard to give the experience of, you know, what have they done? What have they done? And to give that knowledge of what it's like to walk out in St Andrews in 25,000 players, you can't give it if you've not experienced it. But you also can't give it when you're having a rough time. You know, when you're having a rough time as a player, to try and get that over to a player when you're having a rough time, what to do and what process to go through to get your game back. That's hard when you've not really experienced it yourself. But I'm not saying, as you've said, I'm not saying every football player who's played make good coaches or managers. I think it's just a mentality, an attitude, a character in that player to become a coach and then pass on your knowledge. And that's all you do. You pass on your knowledge to players who you see and feel that they've got a chance in the game.
So tell us about the Martin O'Connor Education and Football Academy.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, education and football, because that's a very important part of academy work, is education and football. So why did you take this particular path?
Well, I'd worked for the community department of Blues under Dean Altham, and it was something that I felt like it was needed in the area where I was living. So we set it up. We was based at Chasedown, and the emphasis is on education, Tom, because yes, I want to find the next, you know, Martin O'Connor, and I want to get him a foot on the ladder and get him into clubs and trials and things, but I also want him to be educated, you know, in a career
better people as well.
That's what we strive to do, make them better people, because we're dealing with 16 to 18 year old males who want to be footballers but probably won't, so we have to give them another string to the bow and give them, you know, another option, another pathway, another exit route to you know, make a career of themselves in other ways. And you know, it's a big part of what we do, that the education coursework we deliver is sports orientated because they're interested in sports.
That keeps their attention.
Exactly. And obviously we train every day and we play competitive games. So I think for what we do really well over the last, this is our eighth year.
Well, I'm looking here, I'm with you at Warsaw at your centre, and it's, the facilities are like second to none.
Well, I think when you've got the right facilities and the good facilities, it helps and enhances what you deliver. And the football coaching side of us is really good. We've got decent, good coaches. The education, we've got nice classrooms, we've got IT systems, so, and my lecturers are experiencing what they do, so everything is set up for success every year upon year upon year. And luckily our results last year for guys who left, they've all passed, so we're doing something right.
So tell me, how does a youngster get into your academy?
Well, they go online, look at our videos we've got online, see if it suits, obviously get in contact with myself, and first of all, we let them come and have a look, probably partake in a lecture or a lesson or a training session, and then they make their own minds up from there, and then we go on from there.
Do you think you'll get back into the game finally? Do you think you'll get back in? Is it over that part of your life, or do you think maybe?
Who knows, Tom? That I don't think that's up to me, if I'm being honest. As I say, there's a lot of players, ex-players out the game now who would love to be in the game, and I'm probably one of those, but... if the opportunity arises and it's the right opportunity for me, then yes, I'd take it with both hands.
Is there enough done for, we talk about academy players and aftercare, what about professional footballers who one day you're the, you know, the Red Rooster, the next day you're the Feather Duster, you know, that's the way it is, isn't it? You know, everybody adores you, and then bang, you're gone. Yeah. Some manager don't fancy, you're out the door.
I think that's the individual, Tom. I think for me, knowing my upbringing, and I had to work and go and do shifts at, you know, in horrible jobs and horrible weather, I knew the other side of it, and I didn't want to go back to that when I'd played football. And some players, you know, go through the system, become a pro, and then at the end, that cut off, it's a void. Luckily, I didn't have that void because I had interests and things like that. So I looked after myself while I was playing for when I finished playing. Yeah. And I think the educational side, even now we're talking about the academy players and the players that don't make it, that's still got to be added on to players who do make it and have that cut off when they retire through injury or through, you know, can't get a contract, because, as you say, mental health now is tough. And when you've been a pinnacle, when you've been in the limelight, and then you don't have that person, then people, you know, clamoring for your autograph and that, it's a tough world.
Yeah. Any regrets?
Yeah, I should have chased Martin Grange for that money that he owed me in the bet.
Yes, I suppose so. And this is finally, you always played with a smile on your face. Has that been a big part of your game?
Massive, Tom. I think, you know, if you take things seriously, you know me well enough, Tom, if you take things seriously, I think it gets a bit boring, a bit mundane, a bit sad. Play with a smile on your face, whether you win or lose, and as I said, I don't like losing, but at the end of the day, if you give somebody, some people to put a smile on their face, and that's what you try and do as a footballer for your own fans, then that's the best you can do.
You notice I didn't mention the goal at Atherstone.
That's another time, Tom.
But your best goal you've scored?
Atherstone.
No. 2 yards inside your own half, exactly. Top right-hand corner. Tom, they don't come much better.
Wasn't even taped. I can't believe that, Tom. But yeah, I was reminded of a game, Man City at home. It was like the last, I think it was 5 minutes into injury time or something, and I scored in my left foot. So that's probably memorable for me.
Listen, thanks for talking to us, mate, and thanks for being part of the Games Gone podcast.
Cheers. Appreciate it, Tom. Cheers.
Don't forget, folks, we'd love your reviews. Leave a review whether you've enjoyed it, not enjoyed it. We'd love your honesty, so leave us a review. Until the next time, take care.